Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, John McCure, and in for Julia Fellow, it's Adam Roberts.
All right, happy Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with us. One of the big questions being asked this week is, could a charter school be removed from the MPS system? It's been a hot topic, could be decided tonight. WTMJ Sean Brinda has been tracking this story and is with us in the studio. Hey, Sean.
Hey, John, Adam. So tonight, the Milwaukee Public School Board of Directors will be discussing whether or not to approve a 3-year authorized agreement with Carmen Northwest School. For those unfamiliar, Carmen Northwest is an independent charter school that teaches around 550 MPS students on the city's north side. Milwaukee Public Schools Board of Directors President Missy Zambor says that Carmen failed to reach MPS district averages last year.
Charter schools are supposed to address specific needs that aren't being addressed with the district, but we had concerns because Carmen Northwest English Language Arts and Math ACT results continued to perform significantly below the district average by 10 or more percent. Specifically, only 1% of students who took the ACT at Carmen Northwest met the math standard, compared to 12% of MPS students. And in language arts, only 7% met the benchmark versus 21% of MPS students.
Now, those concerns were brought up during the Committee on Student Achievement and School Innovation last week on Thursday, which placed Carmen's future with MPS at a sudden risk. Now, I talked with the CEO of Carmen Schools, Aaron Lippman, and he argues that the district is not measuring those average test scores correctly. And he says the school district already promised Carmen a 3-year agreement renewal weeks before that SASE meeting from last week.
Yes, there are some academic metrics in our contract that we didn't meet. I want to caveat that by saying we test 97% of our kids. The district tests about 67%. So when they're saying we're not meeting or beating the district average, which is what the contract requires, it's not an apples to apples. If they tested 97% of their kids, we'd be far above the district average. Nonetheless, the committee renewed us for 3 years with no hesitation there. We brought 200 students, families, and staff to the SASE committee last week. Many people spoke in support of MPS and the partnership. And then immediately after that, Missy and some of her colleagues on the board mischaracterized facts. And Missy did a 180 on the agreement she had made 2 weeks before with no prior warning to say she didn't believe that we were necessarily up to snuff.
Now, I also reached out to City Forward Collective Executive Director Colliston Morgan Jr., and he says it makes no sense why the district would target a high-performing charter school like Carmen Northwest when MPS schools are not that MPS schools aren't addressing already failing schools within the district as it is.
We've got schools that have been one star, I think 5 of the 15 most performing schools in the state, MPS operated schools on the north side of Milwaukee. We haven't had a conversation about how we're going to address their academic outcomes in decades, and yet here we are having a conversation about a school that's right about the middle of the pack in terms of MPS's district outcomes, precisely because it's a public charter school, and it speaks exactly to this accountability point. We need more schools being held accountable in this way, not arbitrary decision-making based on political and ideological passions.
The MPS Board of Directors will meet again tonight starting at 5:30 to discuss whether Carmen Northwest and 3 other charter schools will get their authorized approvals from the district. Now, depending on what the decision is made, Carmen may still have a chance to stick with MPS, but if they don't get that authorized agreement, they may have to look at other authorizers such as UW-Milwaukee or the City of Milwaukee for operation approval.
All right, stick with WTMJ to find out what happens at the meeting. WTMJ.com or the WTMJ mobile app is the easiest way to do that. WTMJ's Sean Brinda. Sean, thank you.
From sidelines to the studios and everything in between, no one brings you closer to the action.
Micah Parsons is on the trajectory to a first ballot Hall of Fame. That's the trajectory he's on, just plain and simple what it is.
It's time to get caught up on the green and gold with today's insider, ESPN's Alex Stroff, on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
What the hell's going on out here?
Green and Gold Insiders is sponsored by Window Nation. Alex, it's always good to have you here. Thank you so much.
Happy Thursday. Good to be with you.
I want to ask you a couple things about Lambeau Field. Let's start with Coach LaFleur saying, please don't sell your tickets. I don't know. I don't want the coach really focused on that.
Yeah.
Tickets are expensive. Some people sell their tickets for one game so that they can afford the rest of the package. What's your take on Coach LaFleur urging fans not to sell their tickets to Vikings fans?
I'm so back and forth on this because it was kind of an offshoot comment in the middle of a different answer. You could tell he was cracking a joke, but I'm with you, John. Like, focus on winning football games, man. You're 6-3-1. You got a big one. You've got three divisional games coming up. I get it, right? But Lambeau Field's a destination. You're always going to have visiting fans. I know you and I have talked about it the last few weeks, John. Sometimes it seems like there's more fans of the visiting team than the home team. Never really the case, but you can see an uptick the last few years of visiting fans. But you're right. Tickets are so expensive. I don't know, man. Just LaFleur, let's focus on getting Jordan Love the football out of his hands and scoring touchdowns more so than who's sitting in section 113, row 64.
Well, that just means he's thorough, Alex. That means
right.
He cares
yeah.
so much.
Yeah.
But to that point, I mean, you know, for generations, there was this mystique around the frozen tundra and Lambeau. I think in modern NFL times, given that seats do go to whoever can mm-hmm. put the three figures down for the nosebleeds, is the mystique, I don't want to say is it dead, but is it different than it was maybe prior to that Michael Vick game 20-something years ago where
Bingo.
We lost a home playoff game for the first time.
That's the absolute moment I think it kind of started to evaporate. I think it's totally different now. Really good point by you, Adam. Yeah, I think at the end of the 90s, I think it was something like 28 or 29 straight home wins for
yeah.
the Packers.
I lived up there, and it was almost 30 that they got to.
Yeah.
You're right.
And I mean, that's just really not the case anymore. In fact, I think it's two in a row at Lambeau Field the Packers have lost this season, dating back to the Carolina and Philadelphia games. So it's not the same. I don't know how much of an effect the crowd plays. I don't know if the team's just not as dominant as it was back then. But the mystique, good word choice by you, is just different. It's still an intimidating place to play. It's still freezing at the end of November and December and hopefully in January if they get a home playoff game. It's uncomfortable. It's outdoors in the north. But it's just not what it once was, to your point on that.
Interesting stretch of the schedule. I don't think I've ever seen it lined up quite like this. And the Packers are the only one in the division with this. Five of the last seven, I think it is, are mm-hmm. against divisional rivals. I mean, unbelievable that this is how it comes down. Talk about this stretch of the schedule for the Packers.
Unbelievably important. Hard to overstate how important it is, right? The next three are all divisional games. You have, obviously, Minnesota at Lambeau this week. You get a short week. A week from today, you get Detroit on Thanksgiving in the Motor City, and then you return home December 7th to host the Bears. You get a week break, you go to Denver, and then you do it all over again, two of your final three games. I mean, this is where you make or break exactly what your season is. You're 6-3-1. You're still technically in the playoffs if the season ended today, but John, guess what? The season doesn't end today. Still got seven games to play. So ultimately, if they go, let's just look at the next three, they go 1-2. All
That's
of a sudden,
tough.
You're probably on the outside looking in at that yeah. point, and those last couple of games become even more important. So, but if they go 3-0, all of a sudden you're sitting in first place in the driver's seat with a tiebreaker over Detroit in the NFC North. So, unbelievably important, can't overstate it.
I think a lot of people have their eyes, I know at least, on that Denver game in Colorado, mm-hmm. a 9-2 team currently, but you've also got the Bears who are suddenly, seemingly out of nowhere,
yeah.
making some noise. Where is the Alex Stroh fraud radar? Not to give more attention to little brother, but where is the fraud needle in terms of that Bears team this year?
Hold on. I like the fraud needle analogy, but what are the two ends of the spectrum? What are we labeling those? Total fraud and not a fraud at all?
Not a fraud to why are we even having this conversation about you winning
sure.
a Super Bowl, maybe?
I would say somewhere in the middle, closer to the further extreme of fraud. They haven't beaten a team with a winning record yet, but it does seem like Ben Johnson, the former Lions offensive coordinator, current Bears head coach, does have that team cooking in some direction. They've been unbelievably cardiac in the fourth quarter. They've had a ton of comebacks. So they're fun. They're better than they typically are. But do I pick them to win the division despite being at the top of the standings after week 11? I do not.
Do the Lions still scare you more than the Bears?
Oh, big time. Yeah.
What about the Vikings?
Not at all. Their quarterback's no good, I don't think. And J.J. McCarthy, he's thrown an interception in all five games he's played this year. He's thrown multiple interceptions in three of those five games. And hopefully that's the case Sunday as the Vikings come to town.
As we look at this stretch that does include some interesting outdoor contests, whether it's at home or in Denver or in Chicago, weather is going to play a role. It always does as we get down to this time of year, and that means the kicking game is going to have an impact. And I brought this up last week. I do not want a possible win-or-go-home game to be decided on the leg of either Brandon McManus, who I think someone said, give me him in a wheelchair right now over Lucas Haversick. I hate that that's our situation right now.
I do, too. This is probably, what, John, the third week in a row now we've talked about the kicking situation? Because it's truly a disaster, but also a complete enigma. I mean, last week, you go into Sunday, finding out Saturday night that Brandon McManus was put on the injury report, which he wasn't on prior for the first time in several weeks. And then he's ruled out on Sunday going into New York. Haversick misses two extra points. So who can you count on? The answer is nobody. So hopefully it doesn't get to that scenario where a game-winning kick is the decider.
And to be fair, in New York, which is probably the worst example all season of shoddy kicking, it was very windy. The Fox cameras showed the flags and banners whipping around. So, to be fair,
the actual goalposts were swaying.
Yeah, it was super windy, but still.
But still.
You've got to have somebody reliable in that situation. And I don't know that a guy that was legitimately considering a substitute teaching job, a month and a half, 2 months ago, is your best option. But we'll see what they roll with this weekend as McManus continues to deal with that quad injury.
Alex, will you be at Lambeau? How are you watching the game?
I will be at Lambeau. I will not be entering Lambeau. I'll do the pregame show at the Tundra Trio and probably watch it there. So I'll be dealing with the fireworks going off 10 seconds or 20 seconds before the TV that I'm watching on. So I get a little bit of a spoiler.
So then you stay and watch the game? You don't get in your car and try to come home when you're there for game day, do you? What do you do?
It's all dependent on the situation. So this weekend I might, because we have, my girlfriend's sister is getting married in Sheboygan Saturday night. I'm waking early Sunday, driving to Green Bay, doing the pregame show. I might try to hoof it back to Sheboygan.
Is that a Blue Harbor wedding?
It's not at Blue Harbor, but I love the pop. I went to Blue Harbor as a kid. What a water park.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know what I'm going to do Sunday yet. I might do a quick drive, try to get to Sheboygan by like before halftime. Otherwise, I'll just watch the whole thing at the Tundra Trio until the game's, I think it's over. I rule it over.
And then
I'll try to beat the traffic.
Get on the road. Alex Strofe is the host of Green Bay Game Day. You can hear him on ESPN Wisconsin. Alex, thank you so much.
Thanks, John. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. You got that right.
Wisconsin's Afternoon News, Adam Roberts in for Julia Fellow today alongside John Mercure. Wanted to revisit this exclusive story I first reported on yesterday afternoon concerning the ongoing developments, or seemingly lack thereof, at a downtown Milwaukee 11-acre parcel of land that has been slated for the last 3 years to host one day both a professional soccer team, a stadium, a hotel, venues as part of the Iron District. You may recall back in 2022, on a plot of land with a stage and all the dignitaries of the city, Jim Kaczmarek, the CEO of Kaczmarek Enterprises and prospective team owner of this new franchise, stood before the media and the public and made this declaration.
This team will be Milwaukee's team. This will be the team of the people.
For the last 3 years, the people have heard very little about the team. The land in question near the Marquette Interchange, largely the same as it was when Jim stood at the podium and made that speech. So I had a few questions of what is going on. What is the latest on this development, and more specifically, the land itself? Is there any interest, be it from Milwaukee Pro Soccer, the developers Bear Development, with a good footprint, mind you, of projects in our region, or is there any other action on this land? So digging through some records I was able to obtain paints an interesting picture, John. So back in September of this year, an email thread began, including several leaders at the city of Milwaukee, that includes the Department of City Development's Commissioner Lafayette Crump. The innovation director for the city, his name's James Bull, indicates that the Potawatomi and Marquette University were at that time in initial conversations about the university's Valley Field soccer site. So if you don't know, Marquette currently plays their men's and women's soccer games as well as their lacrosse matches on this field on Canal Street in the Menominee Valley, right across from Potawatomi Casino Hotel. So there were talks of possibly Potawatomi buying this land for who knows what reason. It's not made clear in the emails. A later conversation suggested Marquette no longer interested in working with the tribe on a land sale. However, it does mention a location of interest to move their Valley Field operations to. The Iron District site that was sold by MU to Bear in 2022 of May, quote, should it become evident the soccer stadium is a no-go. So indicating some rumblings as part of these conversations that the Marquette was asking, hey, what's the deal with this project
right,
also?
Right.
A follow-up email then takes us to mid-October of this last month. Former Milwaukee alderman Michael D'Amato now comes into the picture. He now works for a PR firm, Schreiber GR, founded by former Wisconsin Governor Marty Schreiber, who we've spoken to and about on this show before. It's based in Madison. He works in an of-council capacity, does D'Amato. And a quote, a very interesting one, seemed to reaffirm Marquette's interest in reacquiring the land at a certain point. Quote, I suspect what MU really wants is that land back for their intramural fields and dome, the Iron District land, and that's the only way they leave the valley. I'm afraid the soccer stadium is on weak legs looking for alternate sites, while again indicating a land sale with Pottawatomie doesn't appear to be a priority. Now, throughout all of this time, all the entities I spoke to either wouldn't comment a lot or reaffirmed we are committed to the Milwaukee Pro Soccer Project. I caught Lafayette Crump, who I mentioned earlier, as he had finished speaking up on another downtown project, the MPAC Garage site.
I know there was a tour. Where do we stand on that?
I don't think that I attended that tour. I can't recall what why, but I did not attend. I know that there are a plethora of conversations going on, both with them trying to continue to make the pro soccer project viable, but other parties are involved. But to the extent of where they stand at the moment, I don't have anything to comment on that.
Okay, so, but it is your understanding that, at least from the perspective of the soccer development, they are still trying to make it happen. I know it seems like the goalposts keep getting moved on it.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
So if you'll pardon the sports pun there, that was basically the crux of the conversations I was having with people on this development as I was working on this story. Now, to a certain extent, before we move on, I do understand to a certain segment the soccer silence from Milwaukee Pro Soccer, because if you in business always try to put a positive spin on things, if there's no news to report, it can get boring hearing the same thing over and over again, and also that doesn't put the two thumbs up on we're gung-ho on this.
Right.
That said, if you want to build goodwill to a fan base, going radio silence seems like an interesting strategy to take. So coming up at 5:15, we'll get more context behind this expansion process for this league, the USL, where this pro soccer team would play in, as well as why the slow rollout may not be as uncommon as you'd think. We'll have an expert on that matter explain things coming up at 5:15.
Has Jim Kaczmarek said anything? He's kind of a really well-known guy, really well-respected guy in town. You played the clip. He stood up there, and I know he wants to make this happen.
Of course.
Has he had anything to say? Is he around?
Not a ton, at least not on the record in any capacity that can be reported publicly.
What surprised you the most in the emails that you hunted down?
Well, the fact that D'Amato was as blunt as he was, because as we mentioned earlier, you put anything on a record of email to the city of Milwaukee, that's there. And your thoughts are recorded permanently for all to see. So he's a smart guy and wouldn't say anything like that unless he was convicted that he believes it's on bad legs. Now, again, this does not mean the development is dead. It also doesn't mean they're going to break ground tomorrow. I know you want a better update on the project than that, but the fact is right now, things are still in limbo.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad we're on top of it. A lot of people have talked about this, and it sure was rolled out with a lot of fanfare. So thanks for the reporting. Good stuff. And that expert, once again, coming up at 5:15, some perspective. I'll give you a little clue. Milwaukee's not the first place this has happened. The expert at 5:15. I'm excited to be joined by noted historian, great author, Mark Lee Gardner. The book is Brothers of the Gun. It's the first dual biography of the gunslingers Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. Mark, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, I'm happy to talk about these iconic Westerners.
I've read a lot about this. I'm intrigued by this era. You've uncovered new information. I didn't think that was possible. How did you decide to write a book about these guys when so much has already been written about them?
Well, you know, the thing was is that there is a lot that's been written about them, but not in the, for instance, nobody's really treated them together. And, you know, it's like Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. You can't write about Wyatt without writing about Doc. You can't write about Doc without writing about Wyatt. And what I was really compelled to do is just explore that friendship. And I just felt like no one had really looked at it in that way. So, yeah, so that's how I kind of came to do that.
The infamous gunfight at the OK Corral. What I liked was you led up to that with so much history about these guys from when they were young men. But let's talk about the gunfight because it's what everybody talks about.
Yeah.
What's at the center of what happened that day at the Corral?
Well, at the center is really this kind of ongoing bitterness between these rustlers known as the Cowboys and the Earp brothers who were, you know, enforcing the law. And even if they weren't at times on actual law enforcement agencies or police forces, you know, they were always on the posses that were going after stage robbers. And you know, they were making life difficult for the rustlers who had kind of had their way for a while. And it was this, like I say, this dispute, bitterness between them. But you know what really sets it off, ironically, is an anti-gun law. You know, you can't carry guns in Tombstone. And Virgil Earp is the marshal, the chief of police. And the Cowboys had been making threats and, you know, saying they were going to kill the Earps. And finally, Virgil had enough and said, I'm going to disarm. They're breaking the law. And when they went down there, instead of disarming them, it broke out into a gunfight, which sometimes happens.
You know, we've all seen videos of it. I saw it most recently in another project you were involved in, which was Wyatt Earp and the Cowboy War. Has Hollywood and our collective memory, by and large, got right what happened there?
Oh, not really. But, you know, the thing is that I look at movies and films, that it's another reality. You know, they're based on historical figures, but it's not history. That doesn't mean we can't enjoy them. And some of the later movies, they do play on some of the tension. For instance, this love triangle between Wyatt Earp and Sheriff Johnny Behan and Josephine, that did exist, and that did, you know, add to the tension between those players and in that event. So, and, you know, some of the movies, the later ones, and, you know, the Wyatt Earp movie with Kevin Costner, which treated his whole life, there's a lot of episodes in there that are definitely based on what we know about Wyatt Earp. So they've gotten better and better over time.
Author Mark Lee Gardner is with us. You know, what struck me when I read your book was that we all know the little snippets. Doc Holliday was kind of a dentist. Wyatt Earp was kind of a lawman. But I wanted to ask you about how complex these two men were. Not all good, not all bad, and you really capture that. How complex were Holliday and Earp?
Well, everybody has their flaws and failings. Everybody has things that they you know, don't look back on with pride necessarily. And these guys certainly had episodes in their past that paint them in a different light. You know, Wyatt Earp is a young man. He actually was a pimp helped to operate a bordello in Illinois. He stole a horse. You know, Doc Holliday in Georgia, he may have been guilty of murdering some young black man in a dispute over a swimming hole. We don't know all the details, but he may have been involved in that. But, you know, what I think is so fascinating about them, and especially Wyatt Earp, is that, you know, Wyatt Earp changes. You know, he ends up finding his calling in a way, which is as a lawman in Wichita and Dodge City, and he was really considered one of the best policemen they'd ever had. And, you know, he does have these embarrassing things about his past, but he did, you know, he found his calling, he improved himself, and he was trying to improve himself and his life in Tombstone, except for this rustler element, the Cowboys, which made that difficult.
Mark, why are we so fascinated as Americans by the Old West?
Well, I think it's been drilled into our heads forever. You know, it's part of our language, part of our DNA, and now deservedly so. I mean, these guys were larger than life in their own times. You know, they're fascinating. I mean, it's, you know, we wouldn't be fascinated with it if there wasn't something there. It's not just stereotypes. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's part of our language now. You'll hear somebody say, well, gee, you know, he thinks he's Wyatt Earp. And here's something that's bizarre. There was a recent murder trial in Georgia, and the defense attorney compared his client to Wyatt Earp, and he was acquitted. So we're still going back to these iconic figures even today.
It's colorful. The history is incredible. It's a great read. It is Brothers of the Gun, author Mark Lee Gardner. Mark, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you for reading my book.
Yeah, you got it. Fantastic book. Really good book. If you're looking for something for somebody who's a historian in your life, or somebody who likes to read nonfiction, this is it, Brothers of the Gun. You'd like this, Adam.
I would.
Very well written. The narrative is absolutely incredible. I thought, and I've read a lot about the Old West, that you couldn't possibly find anything new to write about Wyatt Earp and the fight at the old K Corral, but this book definitely covers it. If you only caught part of that conversation, it's an easy thing to catch all of it. Our podcast every single day is sponsored by Dave Drakamp Heating. Your comfort is your family's tradition. Get your podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and you can always text the word WAN, W-A-N, to 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Text the word WAN and you get sent all of our podcast stuff.